What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Rock Your Brand podcast / video live stream. And I am fired up because today we are going to be talking about and really exposing the Etsy algorithm. And well, there's some things that we discovered by really digging into it. I mean, we've been studying it. We've been using it, obviously, to try to get more organic traffic. But recently, we started to deep dive a little bit to really try to uncover and expose what Etsy really does use for getting your products ranked. And we're going to walk through all of that stuff here during this podcast and really dive in and go through all of the different nuances, all of the things that we have control over, and also what we should be doing on a regular basis with our Etsy listing. So I'm super fired up. I know Chris has been doing a little bit of behind the scenes work as far as digging in to the old algorithm of Etsy. And we are really, really excited to dig into this. So this is going to be also a place for you guys to ask any questions. If you guys are listening to this on the podcast, on iTunes, or any of the other podcasting apps, you can always head over to brandcreators.com/group. And you can hang out with us in the Rock Your Brand group where we're streaming this every single week. So that's where you can ask questions. We will answer any questions if you do have any. So definitely make sure that you drop them in the chat or in the comments. All right. So this is going to be exciting. Chris, are you ready to dig in and start rolling up your sleeves and start exposing this Etsy algorithm? You're ready.
My sleeves are rolled up. You know, Scott, I love this topic, and you and I started doing a little bit of a deep dive into this because we've been talking about it. We've been kind of diving into our thoughts and feelings based on what we've seen, but we haven't done like a deep dive into the documentation like we did this week. And I got to say, I feel vindicated about the things that we've been saying about the Etsy search algorithm, right? You and I have talked about some of the things that most Etsy gurus, people don't talk about, right? They talk about SEO, right, but they leave out the important stuff. And we've gotten some questions. We actually got a question last week that we now have a definitive answer to. And it happens to match the answer that we gave off the cuff, which I think is kind of funny, just based on our experience, right? We gave our opinion. Now we actually have some documentation directly from Etsy to back that up, which I found amusing. But I think the thing that most people lose when they're looking at any of the SEO stuff, whether it be for Etsy, for Amazon, for their blog, is they forget who SEO is supposed to be for. And if you do that, then you lose out on the things that actually matter, right? SEO is not for Etsy. SEO is not for Google. SEO is supposed to be for the user. And if we start with that in mind, right, the user meaning in the case of Etsy, the person searching on Etsy to find a thing. Right. If we start with that in mind, we can start to backwards engineer how Etsy would think. And it turns out, according to their documentation, that's exactly how they're approaching it, right? They're coming at this from a user perspective. And if we think about it that way, then it starts to make a lot more sense. We can figure out what actually matters and then start to backwards engineer why our listings are or are not ranking for a specific keyword or phrase. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, 100%. And here's what I want also to say here, because I know we have people that are coming into the stream or listening to the podcast that might be brand new and they don't know what SEO is. So let's just explain what SEO is. It's search engine optimization, but why don't you just cover like the overall, I guess, what it looks like as far as for the end user, but also for us as a seller, and kind of just explain that. But for anyone that is brand spanking new, when you start hearing these words start flying around, I don't want them to be unidentified because you don't know what they mean. Search engine optimization. And in this case, we're talking about Etsy being the search engine, because if you think about it, you're going to Etsy and you're searching for a product. The difference is it's a buyer's search engine. Google, for the most part, you can search for products on Google, but for the most part, you're going to Google to search for an answer, or you're looking up something. Amazon is a search engine for buyers. eBay, buyers, Redbubble, like all of those are buyer search engines. And it's really awesome because people are going there with the intent to buy. So we can actually create more, sales that way, right? Because it's a buyer's platform. So Chris, Why don't you just speak to that real quick so we can kind of just set the stage here a little bit as far as like SEO, what we're talking about and really how it works at a high level.
Yeah. So SEO, like you were saying, Scott, is search engine optimization. In this case, we're talking specifically about optimizing a listing for Etsy search, right? So making sure that it appears for the things we think our product is relevant for. And before we can dive into the algorithm and how these things work individually, we have to think about what the job of a search engine is. And you alluded to this a minute ago. You said, in the case of Google, it's to provide the best answer to the question, right? Whether you type in, grocery store because you're trying to find a grocery store near you, or you type it actually in the form of a question, Google's job when you search for something on Google is to provide you with the answer to that question. In the case of Etsy, people who are using Etsy search are not asking a question per se. They're searching for a product. So in the case of Etsy, Amazon, any e-commerce marketplace, right? The job of that search engine is to provide the customer with the product that they will eventually buy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. And you know, the thing is like we have to understand that Etsy's first, very, very first thing that they're trying to accomplish is deliver exactly what that end user is searching for. And the other thing that it's doing is it's delivering the best product that they're aware of. And a lot of times is being based off of sales velocity. And we're going to speak to that and kind of talk about like what that looks like. And, you know, how do you get ranked if you don't have sales, right? Like we have to talk about that. But really at the end of the day, Etsy, Google, any search engine is really there for the person that is going there to use it to benefit the person. We're coming second as a seller. Yes, we're important, but it's really about the buyer and about the end user that's typing in the result, getting the result that they are looking for, the closest match, so they don't have to sift through, right? So they don't have to dig through. And that's really what they're delivering, is really giving us what we are searching for and as quick as possible. Right? And the best product possible. And there's a lot of factors that go into that. So yeah, I love that. So where do we want to go from here, Chris? Let's kind of dig into like the first area that you wanted to kind of talk about. And then we can kind of explore that. If you guys have any questions though, for us on this, please put them in the comments. We will definitely answer these. We want this to be, loose, and we want it to be also beneficial to you. If you have any questions, let us know. So do that in the comments. We would really, really appreciate that. And also, if you are getting value, smash that like button or give it a little bit of love, hearts, whatever it is, whatever platform you're on. And if you're on the iTunes or the podcast, just leave a review and let us know what your biggest takeaway was today.
Yeah. So let's jump in. Now that we know what the job of a search engine is, right? It's to give the best answer to the question. In the case of e-commerce like Etsy, it's to provide somebody with the product that they will eventually buy, right? So how do they do that? And Scott, the biggest thing that people miss is the second area that I want to cover here. But when we watch videos or like read blog posts about Etsy SEO, the only thing that people ever really seem to talk about is what Etsy calls query matching, right? So matching a listing to what somebody is typing in. And that's the most obvious and kind of surface level thing, right? A search query is just what somebody is typing in, right? So if you hear me say query, I'm not just making up words. It is a word that exists, right? It's the search phrase or the keyword, as normal people call it, that somebody is typing into Etsy. And the way that they do that, and Etsy has full documentation on all of this, but the obvious things, right, are the text that we type in. So our title, our description, and our tags do something in those three areas match what the person is typing in. And it doesn't have to exactly match, right? It can be a plural. It can be a variation. It can be a misspelling. But do we have a keyword somewhere in our title, our description, or our tags, which, by the way, includes categories and attributes? So if you guys aren't taking advantage of those when you're creating your listing, if you're not filling out all of the relevant attributes and all of the relevant categories, Etsy counts those as extra tag spaces. So by default, you get, it's 13, I think, right, Scott? Tags that you get by default on Etsy. But if you're filling out categories and attributes, they kind of count with the same weight as tags. Does that make sense?
Yes. Tags they're going to give you similar weight, but again, and we have some data behind this and we're going to share that with you guys. But yeah, the tags are an extension of what your listing is about. You know, again, they give them to us. A lot of people have said, well, they don't really work. We don't really need them. We have proof that yes, they do use them. And yes, we do need them. So yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of the myths. And I jotted down some of the myths that we've heard about this. One of the myths is that you don't need to fill out your tags. Etsy very specifically says in their documentation that they use tags. And we've seen that by adding tags in things like pay-per-click, where we weren't getting any impressions. And then within minutes of adding that tag, we started getting pay-per-click impressions, right? So they are using it. Whether it's as important as what's in the title or the description, I could make an argument there that your title is probably going to be the most important thing, and then your description, and then your tags. But you don't have to worry about that right now, right? That's kind of the surface level. And that's what everybody seems to really talk about. And most people seem to miss out on, Scott, what you and I have been kind of harping on for a while, which is the other side of this is, how does Etsy know, like, if Scott and I create the same exact listing with the same title, the same tags, the same description, right? Same exact product. How do they know to rank me first or to rank Scott first, right? And the way that they do that is by doing exactly what we've theorized about, by looking at traffic and things that lead to sales, right? So traffic, favorites, sales, conversion rate, and your overall store ranking. So each individual listing has a quality ranking inside of Etsy, and your store has one as well, which is why you will often see more established stores ranking faster for more competitive products, because Etsy knows that they have a history of selling, even though this is a new listing. And that same thing, that same theory makes sense, right? Because Etsy started out as a kind of one-off handmade platform. And so if they develop something to say, hey, this person has sold in the past, why would they get rid of that? Because it is a good indicator that this person is creating quality products, right? So they look at your overall store, how well that's performed in the past. They look at the listing and how well that has performed in the past versus the other listings that say that they are the same thing. So they're doing query matching, which is the first step, right? They're matching your title, description, and tags to the keyword that somebody types in. And then they are saying, okay, it's relevant. Now let's look at who is the most likely to sell, right? And those are the two areas that we need to look at if we're being serious about Etsy SEO. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's, you know, there's a lot to it. And I'm not going to sit here and say there's not, right? But I also think that we can't overthink it, but we also need to make sure that we are doing our very best to fill in all of the areas that tell Etsy what our product is and who it's for and, you know, all of those things. One thing I want to say here, Chris, and we'll probably get into it a little bit later. And again, guys, like, we don't have any like 100%, like, we're locked into like this format for today, but I did want to bring this up. And Chris, I wanted your thoughts on this because I'm getting ready to actually, I was just outlining a video that we're going to be doing for YouTube. And the question is this: I have a product, all right, and I know that it's getting sales, right? Because that's always my first thing. I'm always like, well, you're going to try to rank something, but you don't even, you know if it's getting sales. You're just hoping that it's going to rank. You're hoping that it's getting, you know, search traffic and all of that stuff. But what would you say, okay, to someone that is like, all right, I know that there's something selling because I've done the research. I've used Everbee and I've, you know, done my due diligence and I know that it's selling. And now I'm going to list a similar product, not the same, but the similar product. We know that it's a pillow and we know that there's a certain design and all of that, right? We know that someone's searching for it to be a boho Western pillow, right? And we know that that's the thing. Now design does come into it, but let's say it's a very similar design. That person is getting sales and you don't have any sales, but yet you're going to optimize everything pretty much the same. What do you do in order to start ranking and start getting sales? So that's the question that I would like to present, Chris, because I know that that's a question that gets asked a lot. I have my own strategy, I will say, and my theory behind it. But what do you say to someone that wants to start getting sales, but they don't have any sales and other people have sales? So how do I actually compete?
Okay. So let me try to rephrase that question in a way that makes sense to my infirm brain. sorry guys, I'm a little slow today. So the question that you're asking is, we're a new seller. We want to sell a boho pillow. Was that the yep. example? and we don't have sales, like it's a brand new store, what do we do?
Yeah. Yes. Let's call it a brand new store. Cause I know where you're going here, right? Like if we have an existing store, we have things, we're going to talk about that. Cause there is huge benefits, guys, to being able to have sales on your shop, even if you aren't selling that same thing right now and someone else is selling, you know, that same item, but you have sales and they don't, there's a really good chance that you could outrank them, but let's not get into that right now. What I'm saying is, like, let's just pretend that yes, we're a brand new shop. We have under 100 sales. They might have 4,000 sales, but on a variety of different things. And I want to try to compete. Can I compete, or should I not even try?
The answer is yes, you can compete. And we have to think about these two factors, right? So we're not necessarily going to have a good quality score because there's no history there. And Etsy understands that that's a problem. And Scott, you and I have talked in the past about the Etsy bump, right? So like we noticed that when you create a new listing, sometimes you get impressions right away and then they kind of fall off and then they come back, right? So you can create a listing, you get pretty good placement for the first week or two, and then it kind of drops off. And then at like the 3-4 month mark in a new store, maybe it comes back to the first page and it really starts to take off. Etsy actually specifically says, if you read through their pages and pages of documentation, which I wouldn't recommend that anybody does unless you really want to get into the nitty gritty of this stuff, that they do that, right? They very specifically say they give you a bump if you don't have a quality score for that listing because they want to have the data to compare you to the other people in the market. They don't want to shortcut you just because you don't have a sales history. So they will actually give you a chance up front to see how you compare in terms of conversion rate to those other listings. Now, if you are a brand new store, right? I have a boho chic depot on Etsy and you're coming in, you're probably going to get that bump and you're not going to convert quite as well because you don't have reviews. You don't have any of those conversion rate boosting things, which we'll get to here in a little bit. But you still have the first part of this, which is the query matching, right? The keyword matching, matching to what the person is searching. So if you create a good quality title, you fill out all your tags, you fill out your categories and your attributes, which everybody seems to always forget about, right? And you have a decent product, you're still going to get the chance to sell. It's then up to the rest of what you've done in the listing, your pricing, all of those kinds of things, as to whether you stay on that first page or you have to develop a little bit of rapport, right, in that market. The other thing that I would suggest here, and this is something you and I have talked about in the past, is if you're just starting out and you're not ranking for that type of a competitive keyword, is that you run Etsy ads, right? It's a way of forcing you onto that first page. It gives Etsy all of the juice that they need to understand what the quality score of your listing should be. And it gives you the upfront ability for very, 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 very cheap to start to get people to that listing and potentially get some sales and for you to understand what's working and what's not. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And again, I don't want to derail the direction of where you're going, right? Because we can spend a lot of time right here. And I know Trudy had said, this is right where I am right now, where you're talking. So we'll come back to this. I definitely have some strategies that I really feel can help. I will say this one thing, and a lot of people aren't going to want to hear this, but this is what is reality. And this is what you're going to have to understand. Time. It's going to take time depending on how competitive that product is. And that's why in the very beginning, what we want to do is go after products that aren't necessarily as competitive, but also might not be selling as much. It's kind of like back in the old days when we're trying to rank content in Google, we want to go after the keyword that's getting like 10,000 searches, right? Why not go after those ones that are getting 100 or 200? And we get a whole bunch of those. It's going to be easier. And what I'm saying is maybe you have to go after less competitive products. They might not get as many sales, but what you're doing is exactly what Chris was just saying. We're more or less seasoning our account. We're getting history on our account. And then we can start to be more competitive. Now, I'm not saying don't sell those products. All I'm saying is as your account gets more seasoned, it will become easier to rank for these more competitive products. And we also need to reverse engineer like that product that's doing really well. And I mean, even go back to the person that's selling it or the business that's selling it, they may have an email list. They may have a social media presence. you can probably do some research and see if that is the case. It's funny. I did a YouTube video on I think it was like 9 digital products that were doing really good. And I found these plans that someone built. And I think it was for a backyard chicken feeder or something. Right. And someone brought it to my attention. They're like, Scott, that person's a big YouTuber. And I'm like, didn't know that, but okay. It makes a lot of sense. So just some things to think about. Do not get discouraged, but sometimes we have to go about it a little bit different in the beginning when we are trying to rank, because the biggest thing is to start getting that sales velocity so we can start getting some seasoning in our account with reviews, with favorites. And Chris, I know you're going to talk about that too. There's a lot of things that act and that really can help us with the algorithm for our shop without even getting a sale. So keep on going here, Chris. This is good.
That I think is the key, right? Etsy says in their documentation that they look at basically three things, like three big groupings, right? They look at the keyword matching, which is what they call query matching, right? Does what you have in your listing, what you say that your product is, does that match what somebody is searching for, right? Step one. Step two, how well is that going to do in compared to the other people that also match that keyword? And they look at two groups there, Scott. They look at the listing history, right? So how well that listing has sold for that keyword or for customers that look like that person in the past. How well, you know, the other part of that is how many actions do people take that indicate future purchases? And that's what you were just alluding to, right?
Yep.
First thing is traffic, right? People coming to the listing. Second thing is favorites. Third thing is add to carts. Fourth thing, but probably weighted the most if we use a little bit of common sense, sales. Right. But the part of that, like part 2B, right? How well will this perform? And the thing that a lot of people miss out on is the store history. And so if you are a new store, you kind of lose out on that part. So it's harder for you to rank for more competitive things because you're missing that factor, right? Etsy doesn't know. So they're going to take a chance on you, but they're not going to take as much of a chance on you as they're going to take on me or Scott, right? If we go back to that boho chic boutique or depot, I think is what I called it, right? If we think about that and I have a sales history for those customers, obviously Etsy's going to give me a little bit of extra juju there, right? They're going to give me a little bit of extra energy because they know that my customers typically will buy that product. So even if you and I both launch the same listing on the same day, right? So there's none of that part 2A, right? No sales history on that listing. They can still say, okay, for people who look for stuff like this, Chris has a pretty good sales history. Scott, brand new store, doesn't have a sales history there. So we're going to give him the Etsy boost, right? Mm-hmm. But he's still not going to rank as well as long as Chris is, because Chris, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. And so somebody just said, what is juju, right? Magic, energy, effort, right? Any of those kinds of things. And so if we think about it that way, your approach makes perfect sense. And Scott, you and I have talked in the past, and we actually got a question on last week's live about, is it possible to still compete on Etsy in highly competitive markets, right? And the answer is yes. You just have to find a less competitive product that serves that market, right? And so once Etsy starts to see that somebody in your niche is buying stuff from your store, right? Customers who look like the people who are searching for your products are already buying from you. Then they start to give you a little bit of that energy, a little bit of that effort, and it's easier for you to rank for more competitive things. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Again, it comes down to really creating movement, right? That's the way I look at it. Like, okay, there is some basic stuff. And maybe, Chris, what we should do right now is maybe go through the basic stuff that needs to be included in the listing. And the things that are weighted the most, but also like what we can do. What do we have control over? And what is the most important parts of the listing? Because I know a lot of people can just throw up listings fast, right? It's not hard once you have your design. But what you might be doing, not saying you are, but you might be doing is cutting corners by not doing all of the other things that could give you the reach that you could be getting. So let's talk about like the things that we have control over, okay? And I mean control, like let's talk about the things that are going to consist inside of the listing, right? A little bit of a checklist here, right? If you have a pen and paper, you might want to write this down. We'll go through it. And then what I want to do is talk about some external factors that we can do also that could then amplify the listing to help us really start getting indexed. and not wait around. So why don't we start there, Chris?
Yeah, so there's two things that we need to think about when we're creating a listing, right? We need to think about first, what happens when somebody gets to that listing, right? Are we selling our product? And those are kind of the three factors that we talked about at the beginning, right? Those are the things that are the query matching factors, right? The keyword matching factors, our title, our description, and our tags. Does our title match what people are typing in? And does the product match what people expect when they type that in, right? So if we're describing our product and we are saying super awesome ceramic avocado mug, right? Is this what somebody would expect? I know for me, it is, right? If they're expecting a whole avocado, right? A mug made out of avocado, and we can see that by just going to Etsy and typing that keyword in and seeing what's ranking, right? Then that probably wouldn't be the right product for that title. We would have to come up with a different title for that product. Right. And so the way that I would be creating titles is by looking at the main keywords in the market, and lots of tools like Everbee, eRank, everybody gives you keyword search volume, right? It's all an estimate. And we can start with that. But what I would be doing is I would be looking at the titles of the top selling listings, which the easy way to do that, type in your thing, right? Ceramic avocado mug, and then run something like Everbee. And you can see which ones are selling the most. And then just look at how their title is formatted. What are the keywords that they want to rank for? What are the things that they are trying to match to customers? And if it is the top selling listing, that is the route that I would go. I'm not saying copy their title directly, right? But what we want to do is try to capture those main keywords in that title. And I would go after them in the title, right? The longer tail stuff, I would go after in the tags and potentially in the description. So if we're looking at what are the main things that people are typing in, we can get that by looking at the Etsy search results, looking at the top selling products, not even the top ranking ones. Because remember, Etsy's looking at all of these different factors, right? The top selling products and see the keywords they are going after. We're then going to model that with our title and add any of the longer tail stuff. So maybe ceramic mug isn't in anybody's title, but I want people to know that this is a ceramic mug, right? So I'm going to put that in the tags, or I'm going to add that into the description, the things that are weighted less, right? Once we have the title written, we have the description written. The description should have keywords in it, right? Take a look at the top selling products, but it should also be there to sell the product. What are the benefits or what makes your product different from everybody else's? That's the place to do that, right? We're not going to do that in tags. We're going to do that in the product description itself. So we want people to know that this is a 12-ounce white ceramic mug with a beautiful, happy dancing avocado and the name Chris on the back, just so that I don't get it confused with all of my other dancing avocado mugs, right? We're going to include those things in the description. And then any of the less searched terms, but more, you know, still important things that people should know, that's what we're going to include typically in the tags. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I look at this like it's kind of like a skyscraper in a sense, right? We're starting with the top and we're working ourselves down, right? That's kind of how I envision it in my own head, is like we're starting with the title, because the title is, to me, the most important thing, because it is what is being described. It's what someone is searching for. So for two reasons, it tells Etsy what it is, right? Very, very clearly. And they are most likely weighting that the most. And then when someone's searching for it and they see that in the title, they know that it's the thing that they're looking for, right? So the title to me is one of the most important factors here. Now, I know you said like, well, you know, look and see what other people are using and, you know, don't blatantly copy them. Well, I'm going to take exactly what they're using. And I'm not saying it's copying, because it's basically three words or four words. Now, if it's a trademark that they have on a certain saying that they have, well, that's a different story. But if they're putting in their personalized avocado mug, I'm putting in personalized avocado mug.
Okay. So that's not copying the title, right? That's copying a keyword phrase, right? So what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at a few of the different keywords, obviously. And somebody had asked, can you have the same title on several listings if it's the same product, right? And so if the expectation that somebody has when they are searching on Etsy is that they will find a personalized avocado mug when they type in personalized avocado mug, right? Then we need to include that in our title. We're not going to get fancy with keywords here and try to come up with a different way of saying that. We're just going to say exactly that, because we know, at least up front, right? We can always come back and change these things later. And we'll get into like optimizing our listings down the road here in a little bit. But if we're just talking about creating the listing, what we're going to be focused on are those main keywords that everybody is typing in and that are leading to sales for people. The only way to get that data up front is to look at the top selling listings and say, okay, that's a keyword. That's just their own weird take on it, right? You know, if ours isn't Scott, would you say this is a dancing avocado?
It is a dancing avocado for sure.
So, you know, maybe theirs is playing a violin, right? So it's a violin playing avocado, but it's still personalized. We're going to leave out the violin playing part, right? So ours is going to be personalized dancing avocado mug, just so that we have our version of that. But we can still take the root keywords, right? The things people are typing in, right. And that's what's going to go into our title. And so we have our title, we're going to write our description, right? Which is why somebody should buy the product, what makes it different, what's part of the product, all of the product details, make sure to include those. And Scott, that's a big mistake I see a lot of people making, is they don't include product dimensions or materials or any of those kinds of things in product descriptions. And it's mind-bogglingly frustrating for two reasons. One, if I'm the customer, I want to know that this is ceramic and not marble or whatever. Like, it would be silly to think that, but you guys can think of a bunch of different things, right? A water bottle, for example, is it plastic or metal? What is the liner made out of? I don't want anything that is plastic. I bought a metal water bottle because I want a metal water bottle. If it has a plastic liner, that defeats the purpose. And if you don't put that in the product description, that it has a plastic liner, when I get that, I'm going to be mad. If it doesn't have a plastic liner and you don't say all metal design, then I might just be confused when I get to your listing because I don't know what's there. And then I bounce back to the SEO search results to find something that's a better fit for what I need. That lowers your conversion rate. It robs you of a sale and it's going to hurt you overall on Etsy. So just include those things in your description and go from there.
Yeah. Include as much as you possibly can, right? And, you know, the description, and some people have said, well, no one reads the description. No, people do read the description. Actually, Chris, we have a survey that we still haven't wrapped up yet, but we have to definitely do that because there's some really good data. We surveyed buyers on Etsy, and some of them may be you because some of you do purchase stuff on Etsy. And Chris just threw it up there on the screen. If you guys want to go through and help us with that survey, if you're a buyer as well, not just a seller, and go to brandcreators.com/survey, but we're going to be wrapping that up and compiling this stuff. But people do read the descriptions. Maybe you don't, maybe I don't, but for the most part, people do. And I asked my wife this the other day and I said, do you read the description? She says, yeah, most of the time I do because I want to make sure that it's what I'm getting, right? Or it's what I want. And if there's anything in the details that I need to know before I buy. So people are reading it. But one of the main reasons you're also creating that description is because it's more information that we are allowing Etsy's search engine, the algorithm, to basically scrape or, you know, go ahead and scan our listing and then index it for these different terms and these different keywords and things. Now, I'm not saying go in there and strategically put in your keywords, but you're naturally going to be talking about it because it's the product, right? But like Chris said, some of those other factors, those are conversion points as well. And that's, we'll get into that in a little bit as far as like some of these factors, and images is a huge one for conversions, which we'll talk about. But right now we're just talking about the actual words that are going into the listing. So I would not skimp on the description. I would fill it out as much as you can. And I don't mean stuff it. I mean, just whatever makes sense. I would also say one little tip here is to break it. So like if you are, you know, talking about the size of it, that's fine. Or maybe you have different sizes that you have. Maybe you're selling art prints or something and you have it in an 8x10 and 11x14, whatever. Maybe just put up there print sizes available. Even though it's in your listing in a dropdown or whatever, you still want to include that stuff in there because someone might be searching for an 8x10 boho Western art print, right? And now the 8x10 is inside of that listing and now you'll come up for that when someone else might not. So it's a really great place to put those additional keywords as well as your tags and things like that.
Well, and you mentioned this before we move on, right? So that's kind of step one. That's the first thing that we have control over, right? Title, tags, description. You mentioned the survey that we're running, and obviously the data is not finalized yet, Scott, but one of the questions that's in there is how important are easy to understand product descriptions to you making a purchase decision, right? It's a scale of 1 to 10. Right now, as of recording this, and there's several hundred people that have taken this survey, let me do some quick math here, Scott. 43.8 plus 23.1 plus 13, right? 79.9% said that is an 8 out of 10 or higher in their purchase decision, right? Mm. So if they can't find something, if they can't get their question answered, yes, 20% of people might send you a message and say, hey, does your metal water bottle have a plastic liner, but the other 80% of people, if that's not in your description, they're gone. So fill that out, right? Etsy is giving you those things for a reason. They're giving you the categories. They're giving you the attributes. They're giving you the description because people want to see those things. It's silly not to fill it out. Now, Scott, I'm strategically lazy, right? Like I wouldn't want to hand write that every time, but guess what? Once I create one product description for this, if I have a different design, right? So I create that violin playing avocado. All I do is I take the rest of that, right? Because all the product details, all of those things are the same.
Yep.
You copy that and then you change the top.
Yep.
Right? That's it.
Yeah. The hardest part, Chris, is building the first one if you have multiple products of this. And I mean, it's always it goes back to construction days, guys. I mean, some of you know I used to do construction when I was like, you know, in my 20s. And the prep of the job is always the hardest, but then once it's done, everything else goes really good. And it's the same thing here. It's like you prep it, you get one done. Now you can basically copy it or clone it and then just change a couple of things, right? Maybe your images, maybe whatever, but really spend the time here because this is the asset, right? This is the digital real estate that we talk about that's living on Etsy. That is your sales page for that product.
If you want tips and strategies on how to start, grow, and monetize your business online, check out the Digital Revolution podcast with Eli Adams. We interview digital experts from around the world that share their personal stories. They talk about what they're currently working on and where they see the future going. But most importantly, they share tactics in their specific area of expertise with the hope of helping you improve your digital presence online. You can listen to the Digital Revolution podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, or simply click on the link in the show notes below.
Then we have to think about, Scott, part number two, right? So this is part number one. That's what everybody always talks about, right? Let's create a good title, description, fill out your tags, right? Some people will say, oh, they only do two words at a time or whatever. You don't have to fill out all your tags. We'll get to some of those myths in a little bit. But once we have that title, description, and tags filled out, we have to think about factor number two, which is that quality score, right? The listing quality. And even if we don't have sales data yet for that listing, even if this is our first listing, we have no store sales data that could help us contribute to that. We have to think about the factors, Scott, that will affect that once Etsy gives us the chance, right? So remember, there's two sides to this. There's the query matching, which is matching your title, description, and tags to what somebody's typing in. And then there's the listing quality score. Well, the listing quality score is designed for Etsy to understand what will happen if they show someone that listing. What is the very first thing that Etsy can use as an indicator that your listing could lead to a sale? And we mentioned sales are an important portion of that. Add to carts are an important portion of that. Favorites are an important portion of that. But what's the very first thing? The very first thing is traffic. So what are the things that we can do when we are creating our listing to capture as much traffic as possible? We don't have a ton of things that we can do, but we have to think about what would lead to people clicking on our listing from the Etsy search results, right? If we don't have that factor, this is a brand new listing, we have to spend at least a little bit of time thinking about the things that will lead to somebody to click on my boho chic boutique depot pillow versus Scott's boho chic pillow, right? And the number one thing that we have control over there are the images, right? If we're a brand new store, we can't be a star seller. We can't be any of those kinds of things. But there's two things that we can do on any listing to start to do that. The very first thing is images. And Scott, something that a lot of people miss out on, and Etsy talked about this specifically in their SEO update in January, autoplay videos.
Yeah.
Right. And if you put the video in, it basically becomes that first image, regardless of what you put in that first image spot. And it will autoplay inside of the Etsy search results. So if we aren't adding video, that would be definitely something I would start to include in the listing creation process, even if it's just creating like a GIF, right? Yeah. So that there's something there.
It's actually, okay. So the first image is always the first image. The second placement of the image is that. And so what happens is your thumbnail, your main thumbnail is there for like static. And then if you're scrolling, it'll start to play. So it's first image, then it's a video slot. If you have a video, if you don't have a video, it won't go there. And then from there, you have all of the other additional images, which I do believe is a great thing, because if people aren't willing to create the video, it allows you to stand out when someone is scrolling. So yeah.
And that is an important thing that people miss out on, right? And again, looking at our survey data so far, most people are saying that it doesn't influence their purchase decision all that much. But what it does do is it influences their click decision to get them to the listing, right? And we know that. And we know that Etsy is prioritizing that because they've done the research in the background to say, if somebody has a video, is somebody more likely to click on it? Yes. That's why they are auto-playing videos in the search results. They wouldn't be doing it across the entire website if it didn't lead to more clicks, which lead to more sales, which is the goal that Etsy wants for you anyway. Right. So include that. But if you are terrified of creating a video, right, you don't want to even try to create like a GIF inside of Canva, which you can do, which if you don't know what a GIF is, it's basically just a couple pictures back to back. Right. Think of it as like a really short, like a flip book. Right. Yeah. You could do that very easily in Canva. But even if you don't want to do that, we need to look at what's working and what's not in terms of the listings that are selling. So, again, we're going to go back to our friends over at Everbee. Right. We're going to run Everbee, we're going to look at the product analytics. We're going to see which listings are selling best. And then we are going to see what are the components of that image, right? Because we know that is the image that's showing up. Obviously, if they're a top selling product, they're getting a good amount of clicks from Etsy search, right? And so we're going to take a look and then model what they are doing for that first image. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's really important. I mean, the images are so important. And I think if someone is questioning why they are not, maybe they're getting views. I've heard this too, where people are like, I'm getting views, but I'm not getting any sales. Well, there's a couple different factors and we can dig into that as well. But I mean, one of the main factors is are your images good, right? And are your mockups good? Because that is all that they can really judge the product on. I always tell people, like, if someone had a brick and mortar shop, you could walk in there and touch it and feel it and see the quality of it and all that stuff. We don't have that with an online store, right? We have to show it up close, maybe different pictures of the seams, like whatever. Like, we want to show that. If you had a video where you actually had the product and you're unzipping it, or you're wearing it, or you're showing it coming out of the dryer or whatever, right? Like, you have some action and you have some real use so people can see it up close. It's funny. I was looking at a t-shirt design the other day that someone was selling. I was using it as an example. And it was selling really, really well. And the image looked really good, but people were posting reviews and the reviews on the pictures looked horrible. And so I was like, that's another thing. You don't want your images to not look like your product, because that'll leave you with negative reviews. And then those negative reviews are going to hurt your sales. Another conversation. But all I'm saying is your pictures are very, very important for to get the click, but to also get the sale. And if you have video in there, that's just going to, it's going to, number one, give them something else to look at. But even if they don't look at it, it's going to get the attention as it's auto playing as people are scrolling. So I think that one's a really, really big one for anyone that is not currently doing that. And there's some arguments. Some people would say, does that help you? Does Etsy actually push your listing a little bit because you have a video in it, because you've fully optimized your listing? Don't know that for sure, but I would think so. I would think that they have a little checklist in their algorithm. And if it sees that, it might go, yeah, let's go ahead and give that a little lift on that. I mean, free shipping, Chris, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Again, I mean, Chris found some stuff out that we're going to share with you guys. Like, I didn't even realize that it was actually in the documentation. So we definitely want to dig into that stuff. So stick around. Chris, before we move on, let's answer a few questions here. I know we've got some questions coming in. Again, if you guys are on the podcast and you want to be part of this, you can always head on over to brandcreators.com/group. That'll take you over to the Rock Your Brand group. If you're on YouTube, you can always subscribe to the channel. You'll get notifications there when we go live. We go live at least once a week. Now, we actually are talking about possibly doing something along the lines of a tech day, where we talk a little bit about this new thing that we're looking into called AI, right? I mean, you guys all kind of know a little bit about that.
Yeah, actually, Scott, since we're on here live, let's just ask, you know, if you guys would be interested in us talking about the new tools and tactics that are coming out that will help people with print on demand, with doing things on Etsy, let us know in the comments. literally before we got on, Scott and I were having this conversation over the little voice messaging app that we use. So, you know, it's worth asking you guys if you think that would be useful, talking about the new developments, talking about how to streamline your process for product creation, listing creation, all of those different kinds of things in this kind of an environment as kind of a, you know, like a weekly thing. If you guys think that that would be useful, just because there's so much changing right now that it might be useful to have an environment where you guys can come and do that. Scott, before we dive into some of those questions, I wanted to address the one other thing that we have control over, whether we're a new store or just creating a new listing, right? And it's going back to that getting people to the listing thing, right? And that is running Etsy promotions, right? Etsy has very specifically said, right, and we know if we run an Etsy sale, right, a promotion on Etsy, when we get down into that 48-hour window, right, the last 2 days of that sale, that they put that countdown timer in the organic search results. What is the reason that they do that, Scott? Why would they show that to people in the organic?
Yeah, well, it's a great driver for sales because it adds urgency and also what we call scarcity in the marketing world, right? Anytime that you see that, and we've all done it. I mean, heck, let's just think about Kohl's Cash. If any of you are Kohl's shoppers, my wife is, she was years ago more so than today, but we would get Kohl's Cash and then it would expire. And then, you know, you'd have to run to the store. Now they didn't have a countdown that said, you know, if they had a text message said, hey, by the way, it's going to expire tomorrow. I mean, she had to mentally log it or put it in her phone. But anytime that we have urgency because something's going to expire and we want to get it, we always do react faster. Right. And that's why they do that. And, you know, Etsy has done it brilliantly. And so there's some ways too that we can do this so we can constantly have sales with countdowns. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but it's really powerful to have those sales running. So I'm a big, big fan of the sales countdown timers.
Yeah. And I would say, look, that is one small thing in this Etsy ecosystem that we have control over. So as part of your listing creation process, even if this is your first listing, consider doing that, run that promotion, right? Don't worry about making all of the profit up front. Cut it down to a place where you feel comfortable, right? Where you're not going to be paying money out. But if you can run a promotion, do that when you create the listing. Why? Because Etsy is going to give us that boost in organic search, and every single thing that we can do to get traffic to that listing, right? Especially traffic from within Etsy search, where Etsy is really examining all of these different factors, the better off we are going to be long-term. So take advantage of that Etsy boost, right? Run those promotions and just make that part of your listing creation process. And you'll start to see that this becomes a little bit easier. You don't have to run promotions all the time, but I would kind of build that into my listing creation process as a product launch, right? Like anybody in the real world, Sony, like everybody that you can think of, they do a product launch.
Yeah.
We can't really do that in the Etsy ecosystem because we're waiting for that traffic to come in. So what do we have control over? Ads, turn those on from day one, right? And then turn on that Etsy sales promotion feature and take advantage of the extra clicks that you're going to get during that time period.
Yeah. I would also say, if you have an email list, if you've been selling for any period of time and you've been taking the AWeber connection and building your email list and stuff and communicating, that's another great way to get some sales out the door. It's a little bit more advanced, I will be honest, but it is something that whenever you can drive that external stuff and heck, from old customers, like your chances of making sales on those guys is going to be a lot easier than just a stranger, which is common sense. All right, guys, do me another favor real quick. We're going to wrap up this section and then we're going to go ahead and do some questions and then we'll dig back into some more stuff that Chris discovered that I think is going to be really, really exciting for you guys, because once we understand what Etsy is literally saying, we can implement it. But do me a favor. If you guys are finding this valuable, give us a little love, smash the like button, leave us a comment, let us know if you have any questions. Also share this if you are on any of the social platforms. If you're on the podcast, well, you can just head on over to iTunes, leave us a review over there. Let us know what one of your biggest takeaways is right now. But yeah, we just want to get this out to more people that are selling on Etsy that could benefit from this. And that's really our whole goal here, is to come on here and provide you guys with some value. So let us know if you guys are getting value, and also give us a little love by smashing that like button, give us a little hearts or whatever you do on the whatever app you're watching this or listening to this on. That would be awesome. Chris, let's answer a few of these questions. I think the one I want, because we were just talking about it, and I'm going to go a little bit of out of order here, is on the sales stuff. Okay. And there's also another really good one here, guys. This one's a good one. We're going to talk about this one. I mean, I'm going to throw it up on the screen here real quick, but when you change a listing after posting it, does it make it suffer in any way? That's a great question. I'm going to pause on that because we got to dig into that one. That's a great question. But yeah, let's talk about this here real quick. Is there a way to do like a 12-hour sale? And the answer is maybe not exactly 12 hours. Depending on when you set the sale up, you have to select a day to a day, right? Or you could do the day to the same day. But what's going to happen there is it will be like, let's say I started it right now. And then I said I wanted it to end, you know, by tomorrow. It's real. If I select tomorrow, it's going to go all day tomorrow and today, right? So it'll give me those extra few hours. My advice would be is to kind of get yourself in a schedule. If you were going to do that, if you were going to do like a 24-hour type sale, what I would do is I would just make it a point that maybe in the mornings when you check your stuff, you just start a sale, right? And then by the next day, it'll have expired. And then you would just start another sale. That's a way to do it. And the other way to do it is don't worry about always having the countdown every day. Just run a shorter sale, 3-day, 5-day, 7-day. I wouldn't probably advise like doing it every single day like that. I'd let it run its course.
Yeah. And that countdown timer shows up in the organic search within 48 hours. So you wouldn't have to run it just for today to get that countdown to show up. At least the last time I looked, it's within 48 hours. So yep. If we launch that and we launched a 5-day sale, they are still going to see that there's a promotion when they get to the listing. And then when we get into that critical 48-hour window, that's when it's going to start to show up in the organic search results, which makes sense, right? And so if you set it for the same day, you should be able to do that. But there's not really a reason to go in and do that all the time, right? Just set it for 3 days, 5 days, whatever that sale is going to be. And then when it's time, it'll just start showing up on its own.
Okay. Let's go ahead and looks like Vincent here did. I'm just going to give a little shout out here. It says, been saying selling AI Vector, got 50 sales in 13 days, still unprofitable, but we'll see. And the reason why he's saying, I believe that he's not profitable yet is because he's probably running ads. And you know what, Vincent, that's a smart move, because a lot of people won't run the ads because they're not making a profit. And I'm a huge fan of front loading with sales and then reaping the benefits later. I mean, we've been doing that for years, whether it's on Amazon or any other platform. You always want to get those sales going because everything else kind of backfills from there, right? You get your reviews, you get seasoned account, you get all of that stuff. So good job, Vincent. I'm glad to hear that. And yes, Chris, we did get an absolutely want to hear your take on AI. So yeah, we're going to probably do that. So like I said, if you're watching this on YouTube, subscribe. You'll get notified when we go live, which would push us to 2 lives per week. So definitely check that out. We're definitely going to do a few right now because there's some stuff that we want to discuss of what we're going to be using and also what we're discovering. So yeah. Okay. Let's see here. Okay. This is a good one here from Karen. For a new shop with only a few products so far, I was planning to start running paid ads when I have at least 50 to 20 products. So there would be more stuff for the viewer to see. Do you agree with that idea? It's not a bad idea, but I would say whatever your product is that you feel has the most demand, the most search, all of that stuff, I would let that be the thing that I drive awareness from, right? So I would run ads on that product, okay? Now, one little tip here. I don't have the share feature engaged right now where I can actually show you my screen as far as inside of the Etsy account. But if you go into your Etsy listings, there's a little toggle there, a little slider that will say, I believe it is something along the lines of like show data or show views or something like that, right? It's a little toggle. And if you click that, it will literally show you how many views you've had and how many favorites it's had. And the reason why that's important is because it will show you what has potential right out of the gate. And so you can kind of look at that as like, okay, what's the ratio between like views and favorites? but also it shows you that there's something there that is getting good traffic right out of the gate. And that might be something to amplify. So if you, I wouldn't wait. Like, I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, I wouldn't wait on anything. I would get some products going and I would start figuring out what ones had the best potential. And I would even just start it with a dollar or two per day. Start getting in the algorithm, start getting indexed faster. And one thing we didn't talk about, which Chris will talk about this in a little bit, is, and really it's a theory. We don't know if it's accurate, but like, will Etsy give us a boost in rankings because we're spending money in the Etsy ads platform, right? That's something that we'll definitely need to dig into.
Yeah. Let's just talk about that, right?
Okay.
In my mind there, it would be silly for them to say, this person is spending money. Let's reward them organically. However, if we think about that listing quality score perspective, right? I don't think it's a direct ranking factor. Right. Just because you're willing to spend money doesn't mean anybody cares about your stuff. But the indirect side of that, Scott, is you are getting all of the things from paid ads that Etsy is looking for to give you that listing quality score. Right. You are getting traffic. That traffic is then turning into sales and favorites and add to carts. Right. And so if we're getting those things, Etsy then goes, OK, yeah, they're paying. So maybe they don't weight it as much. But they're still going to look at those things and say, this listing sells when people get to it. Let's get more people to it. We love our 20-cent listing fee, but that's not what we're about. We're about that transaction fee, right? We're about all of those things. And so it follows logically that even if they don't give you a direct boost for handing them ad money, which in my mind would be a little counterintuitive if you're thinking about serving the best product versus the most paid for product, right? It does still logically follow that that will give you all of the signals that Etsy is looking for.
Yeah.
To rank you organically, right? And it's a way to shortcut that process. And if our listing doesn't have traffic, it doesn't have favorites, it doesn't have sales, it doesn't have add to carts, then they can't give us credit for any of those things outside of, well, Chris's stuff typically sells pretty well, right? Right. So they give us that store boost, but we still lose out on that listing quality part until we start to get traffic. And so if we can shortcut that with ads, it makes perfect sense to me to run ads to get those initial signals over to Etsy. And then we can pull back, or if the ads are working, right, we just let them continue to run would rather have a paid ad spot and an organic spot than just the organic spot.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that. Lynn asks, is it ideal to have the same long and short tail keywords in the titles, tags, and descriptions of your multiple listings if they are the same product, like all mug listings? Thank you in advance. I think you addressed this, but I kind of wanted to just dig in a little bit deeper. And I think what Lynn is asking is like, okay, we have the same listing. We're going to just clone it and just make it identical. If it's identical, but there's just, you know, for whatever reason, you are listing it again for maybe it's a different size and you didn't want to create another variation on a listing. There are pros and cons to doing that. I've heard people say like, well, and I wouldn't say like create a listing for your small, your medium, and your large, right? Like that would kind of be silly. But if you do have one that's like a different style, like if you were selling like certain horse breeds, right? And you didn't want to have the listing come down where people would select in the drop down different horse breeds, it might make more sense to create separate listings. I don't know personally if Etsy weights that differently, a separate listing versus a variation. Don't know. And Chris, maybe you have some thoughts on that. But what I would probably say in something like that would be, yes, create a new listing. So that way there you get that full listing out there. That's like another asset that's leading people over to your shop.
Yeah. Our general guidance, I think on bundles does makes, or on variations kind of makes sense, right? Where if it's something totally different, so dancing avocado versus violin playing avocado, right? Then that would be a different listing. If I have this same mug and the main keyword is ceramic mug, and there's a white version, a red version, and a green version, I would do that as the same listing, because what the person is looking for 99% of the time is the design, and then they'll buy based on the color, versus coming to that listing looking for a violin playing avocado, seeing that all of the photos are of the dancing avocado, and then just ignoring the drop-down selector that has 15 variations in it of the different moves that the avocado can be doing.
Right.
So we have to think about it, even over and above thinking about it from an SEO standpoint, mm-hmm. think about it from the downstream effect of that. When somebody gets to the listing, what is the thing that's going to have them buy or stop them from buying? And if that's the case, Etsy doesn't care if you have two listings or 20 listings for that matter that have similar things, as long as they are serving a different customer at the end of the day. And so if it's a different person that would buy it, so it's a different type of cat, it's a different type of avocado, it's a different design, then it should probably be a separate listing. If it's just a color variation, make it the same thing, or a size variation, make it the same listing. Because somebody typing in medium versus large and looking at the photos, that's not going to stop them from buying. Where it would stop them from buying is if they go to the product description and they see that you only sell a quintuple XL, right? That's when they would stop and go back. So just think about it from the buyer perspective. I wouldn't worry about Etsy. What Etsy is trying to do is both of the factors that we talked about. They're matching the search term and they're matching the buyer based on your behavior. And so if somebody's coming to that listing and buying and it matches the keyword, then they're going to rank you regardless of whether you have five things that match that keyword or 25 things that match that keyword. And they're going to rank you based on which one is most likely to sell to that specific person typing that thing in. And that's kind of the other thing that we haven't really dove.
We haven't dove into yet.
It doesn't sound right. But anyway, right. There is a little bit of personalization in this as well, because Etsy's looking at the customer and they're saying, okay, when Scott types in dancing avocado, he buys a lot of pillows. So I'm going to maybe weight the pillows with dancing avocados more than the mugs. Chris buys a lot of mugs, so I'm going to weight the mugs a little bit more for him. And they do look at that a little bit, but it really basically comes down to the two factors that we were talking about. And then they layer personalization on top of that.
Yeah. Let's answer one more quick one and then we'll get back to really kind of like outlining more of, I'd really like to dig into what you found within Etsy's like documentation, like what they're clearly saying, like they are using. So I think that that would be a good one. So, and I did want to say to anybody that's just joining us, go ahead and drop in the comments. If you have any questions, we'd be more than happy to potentially answer them on this episode here, on this stream. So this one here, I wanted to answer. I sell digital files. Do you think that having the first listing photo be the design on a white backdrop would be good? Or do you think people would be more drawn to a photo of the file in use? It's a great question. If the file in use, like let's just use something that's very common out there, some type of spreadsheet, right? Maybe it's a budgeting spreadsheet. I would much rather see a really nice, you know, graphic mock-up that shows it on an iPad or whatever. But then I would want to see in that video, it actually being used with numbers being entered to show the simplicity of it. And I think that would look really cool. And that would also get my attention as I'm scrolling, because I see the image, but then all of a sudden I see it in use. So I would say that's how I would use that. I wouldn't say putting the digital file on a white background. That's just going to be kind of blah, right? It's going to be like, okay, great. It's just a PDF or whatever, right? You want to make it stand out. You want it to be colorful if it can be, or at least you want it to pop. And then having the video, that's going to actually show it being used, which is really, really effective, I believe, because if it's something like that, people want to see it in use. All right. Let's do that real quick, Chris. Let's go into what Etsy has confirmed of what they are actually saying. This is what we want, and this is what we are using to rank you.
So there's those two main categories, right? The does it match what somebody's typing in, and then what happens when somebody comes to your listing, right? Compared to all of your competitors. But the other side of this, Scott, and there's a lot of myths that have floated around, including we got a question last week about a strategy that an Etsy guru had put out about a low upfront price with a high shipping cost. And there are some things that Etsy very specifically says in their search engine handbook that contradict that directly. In fact, Etsy very specifically says, Scott, that because customers prefer free shipping, if you offer free shipping, that gives you a little bit of a boost, which kind of makes sense when we think about it from the other perspective, right? What is the job of Etsy? To serve the product that the person is most likely to buy, right? That's the job of the search engine. And so if they're looking at that quality score, they know that listings with free shipping have a higher conversion rate, which is part of that quality score. So if you offer free shipping, Etsy gives you a boost, right? Not to say that you should offer that on every single product, but anywhere that it makes sense, if you can do that, you do get a little bit of extra love from Etsy. Is that the kind of stuff that you were talking about, Scott?
Yeah, there's that. And I want to talk about the shipping thing. I think that one's a really important one. On the
That was the shipping thing.
Well, I know, but I wanted to dig in a little bit deeper on the free shipping thing. Because you covered like, okay, that's what they want. But for a lot of people, they're building it in and thinking, though, even though they offer low shipping, it's as good, right? Like, I want to really focus on, like you said, like they're saying free shipping, give them free shipping. Don't just give less shipping. Like, even if you say, well, I'm going to, you know, build in $9 and I'm going to charge $1 or whatever, you know, it's still not as effective. So the free shipping is like what you're saying, like they're saying like free shipping is going to help you, is going to rank you higher. What else would you say inside of the documentation that a lot of people just, they're either like, well, I don't really know if that's true. I don't know if that's accurate.
There's a bunch of myths that we hear all the time.
Let's go over them.
Is that low cost, high shipping thing, right? Which, yes, that might get you more clicks from Etsy search, but it lowers your conversion rate, which then hurts you long term, right? Additionally, you actually get a lower placement by default from Etsy because you're charging not just shipping, but high shipping, right? Using that strategy. So that's something that I would avoid. Scott, in terms of titles and those kinds of things, right? One of the things that I hear all the time is that keyword position matters. Where I put avocado mug in my title matters. Etsy very specifically says it does not, right? So you can, as long as it's included in the title, they would prefer that you have that phrase in there in the most human readable friendly way, rather than you typing in avocado mug, avocado mug, avocado mug, avocado mug. They would rather that be in there one time. It doesn't matter where it is in the title. As long as it's there, you can rank for it and you will see that happen. Mm-hmm. The same thing we hear all the time about plurals and misspellings, right? If there's a plural of the word, mugs versus mug, should I write mug, mugs, mugsy, muggery, right? Dove, dive, doved, right? Whatever it is. We don't have to include plurals, misspellings, any of those kinds of things. Now, if there is a regional way of saying something, and the example that they use, I know you will like, Scott. So there's a lot of things that are called different things in different places, right? Especially in the English language. Spanish is no exception to that either, right? There's a million words for everything. But what you should be focused on is if you are selling, let's use flip-flops, right? Most people call flip-flops, flip-flops or sandals. So that's what we're going to put in the title. However, there are English-speaking countries, such as Australia, where they do not refer to them as flip-flops or sandals for the most part. They call them thongs. So where do we put that? Should I write that in the title? Probably not, because in America, you're going to come up in a very different category of things than footwear, right? And so if we still want to rank outside of the US or outside of whatever our local geographic area is, but the majority of people are typing in sandals or flip-flops, where do we do that? We put that in the tags. So that is one thing I think that a lot of people kind of miss out on, is they want to include all of those different variations in the title. Just include the most commonly used ones. And then if there are other things like a regional way of saying it or something like that, you can include that in the tags and you will still get picked up. You'll still rank for that potentially. But then you're favoring the search volume versus confusing Etsy as to what the product is. Yeah. If we were to put that in the title, Etsy doesn't really know outside of Australia, right? They don't really know what people are looking for then if they're searching for my product. So they're going to show us to a bunch of people that potentially are not looking for footwear and are looking for something very different, which would then decrease our quality score because we're not going to get the clicks once they show us. And when somebody comes to that listing, if they do click on it, they're going to be very confused as why we're selling them flip-flops. And so if we can avoid any of those kinds of things, we can do that. So don't worry about misspellings. Don't worry about typos. If there is something that's like a regional way of spelling something, like color versus color, right? Color with a U, which is the wrong way of spelling it, by the way, versus spelling it with an O, just an O. Add that in the tags if you really want to be picked up for that. But you shouldn't have to take up a spot in your tags or space in your title to do that. Etsy's going to account for common misspellings, common typos, some of those kinds of things. The other thing, Scott, where was I going with that? I had another just kind of rant on that. So misspellings, plurals, don't worry about that. Anything that is a variation, you don't really have to worry about. It's going to be covered by misspellings, plurals, all of those kinds of things. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. Here's a question that came in and I wanted to answer it. This is from Vincent again. Is there any change since the Etsy website update that I can't see where people search for on my ads? I asked Etsy, but I only get general answers. Currently I'm seeing it, so I'm not quite sure, but I will say this for anyone that is listening and doesn't know what we're talking about. This is another great thing and the reason why you want to run ads in the beginning, even if it's only a dollar per day. And that is, we are able, at least I can still see it. We can see where the search came from an Etsy ad. And we can see it's actually either in the title or the tags. This is where we know that tags are being used, because we can clearly see it in our Etsy ads. We can see the searches that came through. And then the other thing that we can do with our Etsy ads is we can start to understand what other things people are searching for. And then we can say, okay, maybe we need to put that in our description. Maybe we need to use it as a in our title. So those are some things that is, to me, that is the best way to know exactly what people are searching for on Etsy versus any tool. And any tool creator will tell you those are their own algorithm that's being created. I say their own, a tool. So even Everbee has their own keyword research tool, and Sales Samurai is another one. E-Rank is another one. Any of those, they're all doing it based off of, you know, an algorithm that they've created. Now it's really good. It's probably close, but it's not exact. If you want exact for like certain keywords, and not even it's exact, like that's how many are being done, but how many are being done that you can see that you're being visible for, even if you're not getting sales. So that's a really, really big thing. So if you're not running ads and you wanted to turn it on for a week and spend $7, a dollar a day, you're going to start getting information and you're going to start getting data that will allow you to see what people are actually typing into Etsy that are landing on your on your listing. It'll also show you that you're being indexed for that stuff, which is really important. So then you can kind of like validate your own optimization and say, oh, I wanted to show up for, you know, whatever, avocado mug, right? And you're not seeing that, but you know you want to rank for that. Well, you know that you're probably not being indexed for that. And so it can give you a little bit of intel there. So that's what I would say on that. And while you're answering this, Chris, I'll go look real quick in my account, make sure that I can still see it.
Yeah, the last time I looked, that was still there. So the answer is we just have to look at that. But we can also now start to see some of the organic search data as well. So if the listing exists, then you could look there as well, and you're going to see the data inside of the listing. The other thing, Scott, and you mentioned this, I think it's the show data toggle just in your main dashboard when you're looking at the listings.
Yeah,
that will give you some really cool information about the things that affect that listing quality score that we talked about. Mm-hmm. The number of visits, the number of views, the number of favorites, right? And the number of purchases, and give you an idea of how to optimize that listing and how it compares to the other things in your store. There were two other things that I wanted to address in terms of myths. And then I know we have a bunch of questions that we're going to get to.
Can I call a timeout quick?
Yeah.
I'm in the account. So I wanted to just kind of give a little play by play. It is still there. And maybe it's just located differently for you, but if anyone wants to check this out, if they've been running ads for any period of time, if you just go into your marketing tab and then you go into the Etsy ads. Okay. So if you just go into Etsy ads and then it's going to pull up Etsy ads performance, and then you can kind of do it by date range and stuff, where it says your advertising, and then how many listings you're actually advertising, it'll say manage your budget or manage advertised listings. And what I did is clicked on managed advertised listings, and then all of your advertised listings will come up. And then you'll see right below your little thumbnail, it'll say detailed stats. And when you click on that, that's where you get to see down below that, it'll say search terms and orders for this ad in the last 30 days. And then it'll say searches that led to this ad. And then You just open that up and expand it, and it will show you all of the views. It'll show you the keywords. It'll show you the clicks. It'll show you the orders. And then it also has a little toggle where you can turn that keyword off because it might not be relevant, which I actually did in this case on this listing that I'm looking at. So you can start to go in and start refining it on that, which we'll probably do a whole nother live and episode on Etsy ads here in the future. But yeah, that is, it's still there. And I don't believe that they'll take that away. If they did, that'd be crazy. But yeah, it's a really good feature.
And they're giving us more data back. And if you actually read through their documentation, Scott, I told you yesterday, I found a few articles that are actually outdated and they don't link to them directly anywhere. But they gave us a lot of insight into things that they were doing in the algorithm previously, which indicates things that they're doing now, which I thought was funny. But you used to get a lot more data out of Etsy, and then they kind of pulled it back, and now they're kind of rolling it out in a better used format. So I would expect to see more data from Etsy, not less data from Etsy, because their goal is to have more brands selling on Etsy. And the only way to get more sellers on Etsy and more buyers on Etsy is to provide a better experience. How do they do that? By giving the sellers more data about what's working and what's not. And so we should see more of those things coming out. Scott, before we dive into some of the questions, I had two other myths that I wanted to talk about. You and I have talked about the star seller rating and does it make a difference? Before I dive into what Etsy says, what are your thoughts on whether the star seller rating makes a difference or not?
It doesn't directly make a difference to ranking. That's my assumption. But it does act as a potential conversion mechanism that would then increase sales, which then could also indicate that you're getting more sales velocity, and that could help you get indexed. So I don't think it's a direct thing that can help you rank higher, but I think indirectly it can. And that's why I do think that it's important to strive towards that. Now, and I don't know, I heard something. I'll check that while you're going through the next point here. But they got rid of the bestseller search and they replaced it with star seller search. So I'll go ahead and investigate that a little bit here and see what mine says as of right now. The last I checked, it was still the star seller, which if you wanted, but who is going to search for a star seller versus a bestseller? I think bestseller would probably be a better thing for the end user than a star seller, although it was in the filters that you can select when searching for a product on Etsy.
Yeah, so like most myths, there is a grain of truth to this myth, right? Etsy very specifically says in one place in their documentation, star seller ranking does not impact your placement in organic search. You then read about the shop ranking. It affects your shop, your overall shop score, right? Because all of the same things that indicate that you are a star seller affect your shop score, which is that part 2B that we talked about, right? There's query matching, which is the matching the keyword. And then there's the listing quality score. And as part of that, they do look at your shop history, right? Part of that score is based on all of the same factors as the star seller ranking. Weird. Additionally, what shows up in the organic search results if you are a star seller? You get a star seller badge on your listings in the search results, which then leads to a higher click-through rate, just like the promotional timers, right? Just like any of the other things that are the extra little widgets. It draws more attention to your listing, which results potentially in more clicks, which result potentially, if you're doing everything right, in more sales. So even though it doesn't have a direct impact on Scott, if you and I are both star sellers, that's not going to be the determining factor between who ranks first and who ranks second. However, all of those factors that come into you being a star seller affect your store rank, which can affect where and how you're placed. And being a star seller leads to more clicks, which potentially leads to a higher listing quality score, yeah, which based on everything that we're talking about, leads to more placement and better placement in the organic search results. So yes, they do on one hand say it very specifically does not affect your placement. But then all of the factors that they're taking into consideration use the same metrics that are used to calculate that. And so if we think about it logically, it makes sense. They don't want that to be the determining factor. They want to be whether that listing,
yep,
has a higher chance of selling, right? That is the thing that makes the most sense if we think about it from Etsy's perspective. Yep. Their job is to serve the listing that's most likely to sell. You being a generic star seller does not affect that. But all of the things that go into that do affect the ability of your listing to sell. Customer service, reviews, all of those kinds of things, right? Response time. And because of that, you are likely to have a higher conversion rate, which means you are likely to place higher. And you get the benefit of having that badge in the search results, which leads to a higher click-through rate, which leads to more sales, which leads to higher placement. So it's not a direct one-to-one correlation. And being a star seller will not get you priority placement. But doing all of the things that a star seller does helps. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I do think that the badge, if it was bigger, it would do better. I think if they placed it, and I know years ago, Chris, remember Alibaba had like their little badge that was like a gold badge. And we would only search for those suppliers because we knew that they were vetted and, you know, they had good reviews and all of that stuff. So I do believe if I was on the board of Etsy, I'd say put that star badge so people can see it, and then people will start recognizing it, and people will then buy from them quicker than if they didn't have it. And it would be an advantage. Right now, it's small. It's not that big. And I did go into my filters and it is there as a star seller search. So I can search by star sellers. But here's the deal. It's not like on Amazon where you can see on the left-hand side very clearly like prime sellers, you know, prime one day, like all of those things. Like we're conditioned and trained for that right now. But Etsy, I mean, let's just face it. Etsy's UI, their, you know, user interface is still like it's behind, right? And so for someone to go into their search, click on filters, and then scroll to find star seller, it just seems like it's just kind of nested away, right? But it is in there, and I'll just read it real quick of like what I'm seeing right now at the time of us doing this. If I go in, I can select categories or all categories. I can go special offers, free shipping, on sale, personalized monogram engravings. Those are my three things under special offers. Then I can do location. And then from there, I can do seller type. And it is in purple, so it does stand out. It says star seller. I can select that. And below that, it says consistently earned 5-star reviews, shipped orders on time, and replied quickly to messages. And then from there, I can select arrival times and price and color and all of that stuff. But the primary thing is special offers. So again, here, if someone is searching for something on sale and you aren't running a sale, this is also another way for you to get found because you're now having a sale. So you're going to be tagged in a sense that you're having a sale, and then you're going to come up in those search results. So just some things to think about in the filters.
And Scott, I wanted to share a line from their January update, specifically relating to the star seller filter. They said, buyers are able to filter by star sellers when searching for an item on Etsy. This filter does not impact your search ranking, obviously, right? Because they said it's not a direct ranking factor, but it allows a buyer to further refine their search results to surface star sellers. Here's the key. So far, we've seen the filter positively impact how much a buyer comes back to Etsy, giving another positive vote of confidence in star sellers to deliver an excellent customer experience, right? They are literally saying in their SEO update that it leads to more sales, which we know is an indirect factor as to how well we are going to rank, right? So you don't have to like stress about being a star seller, but just know if you reach star seller status, even though it's not a direct ranking factor, it's not going to be the reason that you rank. It is going to influence how well you rank compared to other people. So if you're sitting there looking at your Etsy messages and going, I don't really care, I'll get back to it later, just respond to it now, right? Like take the extra 30 seconds to do the things that a star seller does. It's going to result in more sales. Etsy's goal, and they stated this, Scott, was this back in October that we did like their big announcement update?
Yeah, I think so.
That they're going to be favoring more and more towards brands. What do brands do? They take care of people, right? And if we want to sell on Etsy, we need to be focused on taking care of people. The star seller criteria is somewhat stringent. But if you do a couple basic things on a daily basis, you can achieve that status as long as you hit the sales volume, right? So you're not going to see that in the first month or two typically. But once you start to get some sales coming in, then you can qualify to be a star seller. And really all you have to do is respond to messages and ship your stuff on time, right? And that's pretty much it. As long as you are doing a few basic things, you can have that status, which gives you some of those nice side benefits. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Love it. You have another one you wanted to share? Are we caught up?
Yeah, let's jump into questions, because the other thing that we didn't get to, and I know we're like an hour and a half into this now, is how to, and somebody was actually asking this on YouTube, right? How do we get sales if we're getting views and visits, but not sales, right? And the answer is conversion rate optimization. If we're getting people to the listing, we then have to look at what is stopping them from buying. And one of the things that we can do to do that is the same thing that we can do if we are getting sales, but not as many as we want, or we're not getting as many views as we want. We're going to take a look at the competition, open up their listings, and see what they're doing differently. Are they offering free shipping? Are we not offering free shipping? Which is something I want to talk about here in a minute, Scott, remind me, right? Do we have all of our photos filled out? Do we have a good product description? Do we have all of those kinds of things? And if we do, then how do they compare to what our competitors are doing? Are they phrasing things differently? Are they talking about things differently? Do their photos show something different? Take a look and model what is working and then go from there. And we can do this a couple different ways. If we're just trying to get more traffic, we can take a look at that organic search data that we're now getting access to. We can take a look at the ads data, see what keywords are driving traffic, and more specifically, sales to that listing, right? So if we're struggling to get more sales, but we're getting a lot of traffic, then there's probably some keywords in there that we're not right for, right? We are showing up for violin avocado mug because we accidentally copied and pasted our title and didn't get rid of the violin part. We want to delete that and focus on just being the dancing avocado mug. So we have to look at the factors that lead to the conversion. What are those? It's going to be, does it match what they expect when they get there? Mm-hmm. Do we give them all of the information that they need to make the purchase decision? Right? Are we giving them multiple angles in the photos? Are we showcasing the product and how it's being used? Scott, you mentioned like 40 minutes ago at this point that we don't have the ability to pick this stuff up and move it around and touch it, try it on, yeah. Right? So we have to give them that same experience with photos, videos, and the product description. That's usually where you're going to find that. Take a look at what you're doing. Take a look at what your pricing is. Take a look at what your description is and take a look at what your photo is. And if you're not competitive in one of those three areas, meaning you're not showing the same things in the photos that your competitors are showing, that your product description doesn't have all of the same detail, or that your price is substantially higher or substantially lower, right? Which is something that boggles my mind to this day, right? People think that low price is always better. In a lot of cases, it's actually going to be worse for your conversion rate than a higher price, right? And so take a look at what's different between you and who is selling, and see if you can bridge that gap. Does that make sense?
Yeah. The other thing I would say on that note is you almost have to look at it this way. If you are comparing yourself to another seller, and like Chris just said, you really want to compare yourself, like in a sense to like, okay, how old is their shop? Like all of those things. You definitely want to make sure that you do the research as far as like how many sales they are generating and are you able to match that number? And here's why. If you're not able to match their number, why is Etsy going to move you higher? What else is there for them to gauge that yours is a better option for the person that's searching for it? So the reason why I'm saying that is okay, let's say that you identify that and you go after a product that's selling, I don't know, 10 a day, right? Well, you got to figure out how to get 10 sales a day, or you're just going to get a few here and there, which is totally fine. So my recommendation there would be like, maybe you went after something that's a little bit more competitive out of the gate because that shop has been around for 4 years and yours is like less than a month old, or maybe yours is a year old, but they have 60,000 sales and you've got 6, right? These are things that could be a factor that you really can't compete unless you can outsell them. And so what I'm saying is if it's only a couple sales a day, yeah, we can go ahead and probably dial up the ads and, you know, get our sales, right? But if you're looking at, okay, they're getting 10 or 15 or 20 sales, that might be hard to do. So my recommendation would be still have that product, but go after those low hanging fruit products that might only be getting a sale every 2 days, right? And then that way there, yes, there's not as much demand, but it's going to be easier for you to show up because then Etsy will be taking those listings and more or less like sampling and testing. And if you run ads to those, that will, cause a lot of times they won't be. That's the other thing too. If you're looking at your competition, look and see if they're running ads, because if they're running ads, they might just have deeper pockets than you. Right. And then it's like, do I even want to go down this road? maybe not, you know? So I think that's something that you should probably be researching as well.
So speaking of ads, before we dive into the pricing thing, Scott, one other myth, and I know we addressed this last week, but I wanted to bring this up in the context of SEO, right? Is driving ads or external traffic will hurt your Etsy listing, right? And we both unequivocally said, that's the silliest thing that we've ever heard, right? Etsy wants sales. Well, we now know if somebody comes to your listing and they buy the product, Etsy looks at that as a positive ranking signal, right? If they're coming from inside of Etsy, Etsy doesn't care. If they're coming from outside of Etsy, Etsy doesn't care, as long as those people are turning into sales. So to your point, Scott, you don't necessarily know that their sales are coming from organic search. Maybe they're driving external traffic and we don't know that, right? But as long as that traffic is making sales, feel free to drive that traffic to your listing. It's only going to help you if it's converting, right? If those people are leading to sales, that's going to help you rank organically, which is going to help you get more sales, which is going to help you rank organically, which is going to help you get more sales, right? So I wanted to bring that up really fast before we dove into the pricing thing. And I think it was Sandra Scott that was asking. She said, you know, if I include shipping, then I have to price my shirt higher, right? So I'm looking for the exact question. Here it is. She said, so if a shirt costs $11 and shipping is $4.75, that makes it $15.75. Then the Etsy fee is like $3, so making it $18 in costs. So I'd have to charge $30 to make a profit with the sale. I don't think that's right. I shouldn't have to charge that much, or I don't think anybody will buy the t-shirt if it's that expensive. And so first, we have to remember that Etsy is charging a percentage of the sales price, not the other way around, right? So if we sell it for $30, they're going to take about 9.5% of that, which gets you to your number there, Sandra. Mm-hmm. I just don't want people to think that they're pricing that based off of cost, right? So roughly $3. But my question to you would be, should you be selling something you're not making money on? And the answer is no, right? Unless you want to have a loss leader. And if you guys have ever been in America on Black Friday and saw a $5 television, that's what it's there for, right? It's just there to get people in door. If that's your approach, then go for it. We, Scott, the prices that we sell apparel for, I think if you're just looking at an apparel store, people would lose their mind about what we sell t-shirts, sweatshirts, those kinds of things for. Because this is how we are pricing it. We're pricing it to make $10 or more in profit mm-hmm. after all expenses. How does that work? Well, we know we're not going to be price competitive with Bob's t-shirt store. So if Bob's t-shirt store has a listing in our niche, then maybe we don't get, you know, that organic search sale. But where we are getting sales on that listing are from people who are in our niche that have either come to our store or they're searching for a specific shirt, right? Or they're doing one of those kinds of things and they are not as price sensitive. We need to stop thinking that low price is the number one thing that will get people to buy us. There's always going to be somebody cheaper. Just ask Kmart, right? Do you guys remember Kmart? They don't exist anymore. Why? Because Walmart was still cheaper. Now, what's happening to Walmart? Nobody likes going to Walmart. Why? Because it's known as the cheap place to shop. Everybody would rather go to Target, even though things are priced almost identically, because it's not billed as the lowest price place to get things. So sell products at the price you can afford to sell them. And don't worry about the fact that somebody has a t-shirt priced less expensively than you, because there's a wide range of people in the market. And Scott, I'm scrolling through the survey here that we were talking about. If you guys haven't taken that yet, if you have bought something on Etsy, go to brandcreators.com/survey and you can take that survey for us as well. We have, like I said, we have a couple hundred people looking at this that have filled this out already. And Scott, right now, 14% of people say that price is the main factor.
Yeah.
85% of people say that it's one small thing that they consider. Mm-hmm. And so everybody that's saying I have to be the lowest price, just keep that in mind. Again, not definitive data, because it's only a couple hundred people that have gone through this at this point. But that gives us a pretty good indication yeah. that that's the case. And we know this from other surveys, right? Like, this is not unique to the survey that we've been running. Right. Price is one factor. There's a reason that there are Rolls Royces and Kias, right? Like, there's a wide variety of reasons why you might buy something. And it's not always going to be price. So price your products where you can afford to sell them. And don't worry too much about it on the other side of this. And TCFSAF said, you should shoot for around $10 to $12 profit. We're playing around with about $5 profit just to boost sales, but we're still testing this strategy, right? If you get a sale, make sure that it's profitable. If you spent 20 cents to create the listing, right, plus your time, just consider that an investment. Please sell stuff you make a profit on. Don't just price it low because that's where everybody else has it priced. If we are using the niche-based approach, and Scott, this is another thing I kind of wanted to chat through here. If we're using the niche-based approach, people are a lot less price sensitive anyway because they're looking for a bass fishing gift for their dad. They're not just looking for the cheapest bass fishing shirt, right? And so we get those things added to carts. We might not make as many sales, but all of the sales that we make are profitable, right? The other thing, and I mentioned this as kind of like a side factor, right? Where they do some of that personalization. They are looking at customer history. And so another myth that we have talked about, and I think we addressed it last week as well, is should I just get random people to buy my stuff so that I can trip that Etsy flywheel of sales lead to traffic, traffic leads to sales, traffic leads to sales, sales leads to traffic leads to sales, right? The answer is no. And the reason for that is kind of buried in here. And it's something we alluded to last week. They very specifically say they look at how this product compares to other people that are buying that product. So if we go back to the flip-flops example, Scott, and we use the word that they use in Australia to describe that product looks nothing like what people typing that word and buying that product on Etsy are looking for. And so if we just drive random people that have never bought on Etsy or buy all of the random things because they're in a buyer group, right? If you guys have ever seen those where they say, hey, yeah, just send me $20 on PayPal and I'll go buy it on Etsy, right? That actually messes with Etsy's understanding of what your listing is because they only have two things that they understand about your listing. They understand what you say that your listing is, and then they understand how customers interpret your listing. They do that through the buyer behavior part, right? That listing quality score. But they also look at the history of those buyers, the kind of things that they buy. And so it kind of logically follows, and I want to get your opinion on this, Scott, that a niche-based store would actually have a better ability to rank for those products because they have a better understanding of what it is that you sell versus random people coming in and saying, oh, this is an avocado mug. This is a cacao mug. This is a mango mug, right? They don't know. Yes, they know that people who buy mugs like your stuff, but they don't know if it's people looking for avocados, mangoes, cacao. They don't know exactly who to show that to.
Yeah.
But if I'm running a fishing store and they know that you've bought fishing stuff in the past, then I get that extra boost of Etsy going, well, all Chris sells is fishing stuff. So if Scott's searching for fishing stuff, we should give him that extra little boost because his stuff does really well with people who buy fishing stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's exactly what, you know, it's kind of what we do, right? It's like, and that's our whole philosophy is like, we want to be known for that niche and for those types of products. So the more that we can add into our shop, number one, it gives our buyers potential to buy more, which we love. And we also then start to be seasoned and to be known for that topic or for that niche. I mean, it's just like on YouTube. I mean, let's be honest. Like if I'm on YouTube and I'm posting a whole bunch of content about Etsy stuff, I'm probably going to start getting recognized for that. And they're going to start giving it to that audience after people have kind of raised their hand. Like it's been happening, right? It's the same idea. So we always want to be putting out content. At least we do. For that specific niche, because we do think it has the long tail effect of that seasoned account and kind of that sales history, which I think is huge.
And that leads me into this next question that we got here, Scott, which says, I'm starting over. I'm using an old store account. Is it better to start a new account? My answer to that would be, and I'm shocked we don't have a banner for this.
Well, wait a minute. Can I say this? I'm actually surprised because I just shot a video and I posted it last week or beginning of this week or last week. And it's like how to revive a dead Etsy shop or should I start a new one? So you might want to go watch that video. It's on the YouTube channel. Just posted it, by the way, less than a week ago. So
it was last Tuesday.
Yeah. And I give some different checkpoints to kind of go through. But yeah, go ahead, Chris.
So should I do this? And the answer is it depends. If the niche you are going to sell in now was associated with that old account, then I would use the old account. If it's not, then I might not. And Scott, I know you alluded to this in that video where you talk about if you have sales history in that account, take a look, right? I'm going to give you guys some of the secrets from that video. Still go watch it. It's worth watching. But if you have a sales history in that account and you are trying to use the niche-based approach, you can go through your sales history, find a niche, right? Find the buyers for that account, and then start to build the account in that niche. If your new niche has nothing to do with that, I probably would just start a new account. to be quite honest with you. And it's for the reason of Etsy understanding who the buyer is, right? Yes, you will have the store history, which is, as we said, kind of a shoulder ranking factor, to use a Scott Volkerism, right? It's not a direct, but it's kind of sitting there to the side. But if that sales history is all about cats, right? People buying cat stuff, and we're now going to launch a store about birds, probably not the type of sales history and data that we want, because Etsy is going to be confused about what it is that we are selling, right? Etsy is not magic. They only have the data that they get, which is the descriptions and the sales history, right? So if it's going to be in a niche that you were selling in previously and you're just rebooting it, then yeah, use the old account. If it's a brand new niche and a totally new approach and you're not doing anything, then I would probably start a new account.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a case by case, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you have to, because think about this, and someone had just posted in here, Harmonix, I think it is, or Harmonix, had posted.
Harmonies?
Is that what it is? He basically, or they, it says Heavy, and it's got the rock and roll sign. So cool, rock and roll. So I would, on something like this, it's like, well, he's going through, or they're going through a situation right now that could just because it's a brand new account and now it got suspended because it's a new account and it's had sales and now they couldn't verify the banking information and all of that stuff. So part of me says, yeah, if it's not aligned, start a new one. Is it impossible to take that and retrain Etsy on what it's about? And are you going to get some more benefits because you've already been around and you've got maybe a star seller badge, or maybe you have history that you've got good reviews? I think it's a case by case. And I think it's going to depend, on your situation. But those are the things that I'd be looking at. And quite honestly, Chris, like what you just said there, and I think if you and I were to sit down and talk about that, like we had an Etsy shop that was about birds and you said, I want to start one on cats. I think I would try to convince you to keep the one with birds because it's still pets, right? Because then we have to go through all of the other things, right?
And the question there would be, is it the same buyer, right? Because we get the benefit of having, and this is one of the things I like about these conversations, guys. In case you haven't noticed, Scott and I don't just parrot. See what I did there? Everything that the other person says, there is occasionally a disagreement and it's on things like this, right? So for me, and I don't think we're actually disagreeing. I think there's just like, it does fall into the it depends category and we're kind of exploring this, right? So for me, if it's the same market, right, or the same buyer persona, then I would be cool with using that old store. If it's a totally different thing, so we were selling to vegans and now we are selling to carnivores, would you still feel the same way?
No, yeah, I get what you're saying. And that's exactly where I would, you know, probably draw the line. Because like you said, like, and I think also the other thing is how many sales, like, you know what I mean? Like how old is the account? It's kind of like an old website that is kind of related, but we're going to turn it a little bit and we've got like a really good domain authority, right? Like, it's like, can we make it work? You know, we try to figure out an angle. But yeah, I do think it does depend, as Chris said. Let's move on here. I wanted to address this again from Sandra. How do you compete with a shop that has t-shirts for $10 on sale at 46% off when that's the cost of the shirt in print and demand? Mine are 25 with 30% off at $17.50. I wouldn't sell shirts. That's my answer. I just wouldn't do it. I'm sorry. And Sandra, I'm saying this out of kindness and out of love, but it's like, I wouldn't go into this thing saying like, I got to compete with that, with someone that's like lowballing, like, I don't want to compete with those people. I want to create maybe something that is similar, but it's going to be used as a pillow, as a blanket, as a flag, as something else, right? A tote bag, like something else that I'm not directly competing with a t-shirt that's selling for $11.50. And the reason why they can do it, by the way, is because a lot of time they're doing the printing themselves and they're buying shirts in bulk. They're buying them for $4, $5. And then they're using an inkjet printer or they're using some type of screen printer that they have, and they're punching them out and they're making them for $6. So you can't compete with that because you're doing print on demand. I just would not go to, I would start looking for products that aren't t-shirts. That would be my advice.
The bigger mistake that I see here, and I agree 100% with what you just said, but the bigger mistake that I'm seeing here is that we are assuming they are competition just because they show up in the organic search results, right? 99.9% of the time when we see somebody that's doing that, it is a t-shirt printing shop. If you are a t-shirt printing shop, then yes, they would be your competition. But that's not the approach that we advocate for, right? We advocate for a niche-based approach. And so two things happen when you use that approach. One, we have a lot more things that we can sell, and chances of us ever seeing Bob's t-shirt mill ever again, across the different things are very low, right? If we start looking at fishing pillows and fishing blankets and those kinds of things, Bob's t-shirt mill isn't going to show up for them because they are Bob's t-shirt mill. They make t-shirts, right? So they are competition at the product level, but not at the niche level. If it is somebody, right, in that like 1 to 0.1% where they are in our niche, then there's still not really a concern there. If it's a good selling design, we can still create it and sell it at a price that is reasonable and makes us money. We just won't get those sales from the organic search results. We'll get those sales from people adding to cart when we run a promotion in the store, and people who have bought from us in the past get the notification, come to our store. They are then not looking at the organic search results and don't know that Bob's T-shirt mill is selling them a sweatshop T-shirt at $10, right? They are just looking. They go, I love this design from Sandra. I've bought stuff from her in the past, and I'm going to go buy it. So if we use the product-based approach, it's very easy to get frustrated. If we use the niche-based approach and we say, hey, I'd like to have that style of a T-shirt in my shop just to round out the products that I offer, know that you're not going to be competitive there, but you're still going to make sales on those things. And that's actually how we deal with apparel mostly. There are some things that do pretty well organically because there's not a Bob's t-shirt mill on those things. But for the stuff that is, a design that's already selling that somebody else is already selling, we don't bank on getting those sales 100% organically, but you still will, right? There will be two people. And we said 80 something percent of people said that price is only one small factor. So if Bob's t-shirt mill is selling it at $10, that's fine. They're going to get some of the initial clicks, but they might not end up getting the sale. You still might end up getting the sale. There's also this weird thing that happens, right? If you're priced lowest, people assume that your product is cheap. If you're priced more expensively, people assume that your product is much, much better. Scott, yeah. I know for a fact, because I was with you once, that you have ridden in a Rolls-Royce Ghost. Yeah. That is a like $500,000 car.
Yeah.
Did it feel any different than a $40,000 Lexus?
It really didn't. Right? Like, I mean, it was bigger, heavier, and I had a driver.
It was nice. I'm not yelling at our friend that sent us the car, but right. I'm not going to spend the extra $450,000 on that car.
No.
Right? But everyone assumes that car is worth $450,000 more because it's priced higher.
Yep.
And so there is a section of the market that will always buy the highest priced. Yep. There's a section of the market that will always buy the lowest priced. And there's a section of the market that goes, that's 30, that's 10. I'm buying the $20 one because I know I'm getting the best deal, right? It's not cheap. It's not overpriced. It's priced just right. It's that Goldilocks pricing, right? And so it doesn't matter where we price things at the end of the day, as long as we are comfortable with that pricing. Just know that you might not sell as many t-shirts as Bob's t-shirt mill, but the t-shirts you do sell, you will sell profitably. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. And we're going to wrap this up here soon. We've been going a long time. Guys, do us a favor, though. Make sure that you have any questions, even on the replay, drop them in the comments. We always come back to these. We can maybe even bring one up on another live or another episode. But do us a favor. Also, give us a little love and smash that like button or the heart. Whatever you have available to give us a little love, we would appreciate that. And if you're getting value from this, this episode and this live stream, we appreciate you. This one here, I wanted to come back to, and I said I was going to come back to it because I think this is really important. And that is, does your listing suffer when you change it? And I am going to say, and I'm going to capitalize this, yes, it does. And here's what I mean. Does it hurt when you change price? I don't believe it does. I think it could change it in a positive way, but I don't believe it does. I do believe if you change your title, it's going to then get re-indexed. It has to, right? It's like you change something and now Etsy has to look at it and go, oh, there's something new here. And then it looks at it and goes, we got to index this thing again. And then it's like, oh, we're going to put it here for now. And we'll see how well it does. And then we'll bring it back up. It is going to hurt your rankings 100%. And we've seen it. But we knew we had to do it because we needed to change some things, some verbiage. So we had to do it. But now moving forward, we're not going to change a listing that's doing very well. And we're going to think about it before we do. So if you're putting stuff like maybe a certain holiday in the title, well, you can put it in there. I'd put it towards the end because then it's not going to show up in the header or in the front because you don't want it to say Christmas in July, but yet it still might be for a Christmas item that could be as a gift and you can leave that and no one's going to care, right? But if we do start playing around, that's why one of the things that I see a mistake that I see a lot of new Etsy sellers making is they're just fiddling. They're tweaking. They're playing with things, right? They're I didn't get a lot of views yesterday. I better change the title, or I didn't get a lot of views. I better change my pictures, or I better do this, or I better change the tags, or I better whatever. Every time that you go in and make a change and hit save publish, it's going to get re-indexed. All right. So be very careful on that. And that's why up front, do the best job you can, put it out there and give it time, right? Give it time. The biggest thing that we're not doing is we're not allowing it time. We need to give it time. And if you're wanting to get sales and you don't want to wait for the indexing, then you got to run ads. And that will speed up that process to get it indexed because now you're going to be seen by Etsy as you're converting to sales. And that is probably one of the biggest drivers in ranking to me is sales. Right? You can have a mediocre listing, but get a lot of sales. It's probably going to rank, right? Now, of course, you need to have some keywords in there that it knows what it is, but I'm saying it doesn't have to be perfectly optimized. So I just wanted to bring that up, Chris.
That upfront, Scott, I think is the best advice we can give to somebody upfront, right? Build it the best way you can with the data you have. If you have 6 years worth of sales data on your listing, then you have more data to work with. If you don't, if it's a new listing and somebody just asked what our game plan would be if we were starting over, right? And I can address that really fast. But if you have data, use the data. If you don't have data, use the data that you can use, right? Which would be using something like Everbee, brandcreators.com/Everbee. You can take the free version, right? Just use that. See which listings are selling the best. How are they formatting their title? What are the keywords they're going after? How are they tagging their product? Are they using tags correctly? Are they using categories? Are you using attributes, right? Is it filled out using the things people are searching for? That's the best that we can do up front. Down the road, when we have data coming in from ads, when we have search data coming in from organic results, right? Then there is a time, and I would say usually a few months, right? Where we want to come in and say, is this keyword in the title leading to sales? Which we can look at from the ads data and from the organic search data. If it's not, then why? And if the answer is because it's Christmas and it's July, well, then, you know, then we have to have the conversation about right. Do we keep it in or take it out, right? But if it's not, right, let's say it is a relevant keyword and we realize it's violin and this is a dancing avocado, then we're going to take a look and see what other word somebody might typing in. So that might be avocado doing the Roomba, right? Avocado dancing salsa on a mug. Right? There's another keyword that we could replace that with in the title. And in that case, then we are going to see a slight change in the listing, right? In how it ranks. Why? Well, logically, Etsy has to match two things based on what their documentation says. They have to match the keyword. So obviously that keyword that we were getting traffic from, if it's not in the title anymore, and it's not somewhere else in the listing, we're no longer relevant for that. So that traffic goes away. But we've also added a new keyword. So now they have to figure out how we fit in avocado Roomba or avocado salsa mug versus just dancing avocado. So it won't necessarily shake up how we rank for all of the things that stay the same, but it will shake up the things that change, right? If we go in and we change listing photo number 5, right? Is that really going to affect it? Not really. If we change the title or the description or the tags, is that going to affect it? Yes. And so we have to take our best swing up front, based on the data that we can get that's publicly available. Once we have a few months worth of data, and I would like to see 20, 30 plus sales before you make any changes, right? So if your goal is to kind of follow the framework that we use, and that's a sale a day, you could do this as soon as a month, depending on when that really starts to pick up. But only look at optimizing. You shouldn't be rewriting the entire title, because as we learned today, right, where that keyword shows up in the title doesn't matter. Etsy doesn't care about it. So all we're going to do is we're going to swap out playing violin for dancing rumba, dancing salsa, whatever it is. And that's the thing that Etsy is then going to figure out how we fit into the ecosystem.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Love it. And I think we will, end this live on that. But before we go, I did want to say thank you for all of you that showed up here. I did also want to remind anyone that's listening on the podcast, this has been a long one. So this might've been a two-parter for you, but if you want to hang out with us on these lives, I know we had a few people ask when these are, because they missed a good portion of it. You can always go back and watch the replay, but if you want to join us live, if you want to be part of our live discussions, you can head on over to brandcreators.com/group. And you can join the Rock Your Brand Facebook group over there, or you can just go to YouTube, Brand Creators, at Brand Creators. And from there, you can go ahead and subscribe, and you should be notified when we go live. Would love to have you be part of it. So I want to thank all of you. We had a few people say there's been some light bulb moments going on here, some flash bulbs. So we always love to hear that. And we also want to hear from you guys, like taking this, implementing it, if you've gotten results, like what your tests consist of, because we're not saying we're perfect. We're learning too. Like we're testing. We're playing in this game, just like you are. We're just reporting on it. And, if you guys have anything that's working for you, let us know. We would love to know it. We'd love to test it and maybe bring it to the audience. We just really just want to say thank you for hanging out with us, being part of this. But do us a favor. If you've gotten some value from this episode, smash that like button, give us a little love, comment, do whatever you can to share this as well, because the more people we can get this out to, we're just gonna be able to help more people and really build. I like to look at it as a long-term business, no matter if it's a side hustle business or if it's a full-time business. I'm always approaching this to build a brand. That's why our brand is called Brand Creators. And it doesn't matter what platform it's on. We're always thinking about building something that we can have a product line that can serve one customer. And that's really what it's all about. Chris, anything you wanted to wrap up with before we officially sign off here?
One thing really fast. I wanted to give people a plan. I know we kind of talked about this when we first were going through some of the ranking factors, Scott, but if you are starting today, right, how do you optimize for this? The first thing we're going to do, we're going to take a look at what the product is and who it serves. We're going to go to Etsy, use something like Everbeat, brandcreators.com/Everbeat, right, to see which are the top selling products. We're then going to model their keywords rather than using E-Rank or keyword estimates, right? I don't care how many people are searching for it. What I care about are how many people are buying it. And so we're going to use that tool to figure out who the top selling listings are and model their titles. Don't copy their titles, but take the keyword phrases, figure out how to use those in your title, in your description, in your tags, right? We're going to fill out our description, include all of the details about the product, everything that anybody would want to know, include it. If you are on the fence about including it or not including it, include it, because it may be the thing that leads to a buyer. It may be the thing that leads to a long tail keyword, right? So include as much detail as possible in that description. Fill out your tags. All 13 tags, fill those out. Whether it's a one-word phrase, two-word phrase, three-word phrase, as long as it fits inside the character limit, fill out those tags. You don't have to be repetitive. You don't have to add plurals or misspellings. Fill them out with anything else that's relevant to your product that you didn't include in the title or the description. Then you're going to go back to those Etsy listings, model the photos and the videos and the way that people are showing off the products, and finish building out the listing. Once you have your first listing up, whether you're putting up one, this week or 10 this week, start running a promotion, take advantage of that extra little Etsy love, turn on Etsy ads, and then go from there.
Love it. Nice little breakdown there, Mr. Schaefer. That was really well done. All right, guys, that is going to wrap up this one. We have a lot more content on the YouTube channel, so definitely make sure you check that out. We have playlists there for you for wherever you are in this process. And always let us know if there's anything you need. Just comment on one of the videos and we will comment back, or we will cover it on an upcoming video or a live stream. So guys, thanks so much. Take care. Take action. Have an awesome, amazing day. And we'll see you right back here on the next episode. Take care, guys.